The author Herb Miller tells a story about a young woman who was filling out an application to a very expensive college. And there was a rather extensive questionnaire that went along with the application. And one of the questions was, "Are you a leader?" And she wrote in the space provided, "I am not sure exactly how to answer this question, but I am an excellent follower." So about 4 weeks later, she received a letter in the mail from the college president. And it said, "Based on the returns of your questionnaire, our freshman group next fall is expected to contain several hundred leaders, so we congratulate ourselves on having accepted you as a member of this class. We shall thus be assured of having at least one person who will follow all those leaders." Leadership has been lifted up. If you go into the library or the bookstore, leadership has been lifted up as one of the most important virtues in American life, right? Leadership determines the success of every business or bank, political party or stockbroker, corporation or magazine, and the list goes on and on. Everyone is seeking better and more efficient leadership. Yet, interestingly, Jesus mentions the word leadership exactly zero times in the Bible. And that makes me scratch my head and wonder, especially when he said, "Follow me," about 20 times in the Bible. Why? Well, I think what Jesus was teaching was that in order for Christians to lead, first, you have to learn to follow the risen Jesus. You're going to have to follow somebody, and it should be the risen Christ. And right here in this Easter story, this followership, this ability to follow Jesus as the great leader, is right here in the instructions the angel gives to the women on Easter morning. Mark chapter 16, verse 7 says, "But go, tell his disciples and tell Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Jesus has gone ahead of them to Galilee. The tomb, you'll remember, the crucifixion and all the stuff that happened the last week of Jesus' life, that occurred in Jerusalem, which is about 70 miles away from Galilee. So the first thing the disciples have to do after Easter is to follow. Note that this is not optional for the disciples. If you want to meet the risen Jesus, you have to follow him to Galilee. You can't stay here in Jerusalem and wait for him to come to you. Nor can you go in the opposite direction, go to the south, and wait for Jesus, expect him to find you. No, you have to go to where he is. You've got to become a follower first. That's the first thing. Now, I don't know about you, and I can't speak for you, but for myself, it seems to me right now that life is pretty confusing right now. I already feel as if I'm a follower of a great many things, whether it's Facebook or email or Twitter or Dish Network or cable TV or politics or tea parties or Occupy Wall Street or kids having homework or PTO meetings or birthday parties. And I have all these things buzzing around in my head at one time. And how can I follow Jesus in a world that is so chaotic? And I can't pick out one thing and say, yeah, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to be part of. Well, have you ever watched a soccer game? When people play soccer, before the game actually starts, there are a bunch of players out on the field, and some of them are doing stretching exercises to warm up, but not everybody. And some of them are dribbling the ball back and forth, but not everybody. Some of them are lazily watching each other and talking with each other, making small talk, but not everybody. Some are practicing shots on goal, but it's all that chaos. But when the coach arrives, the confusion ends. The players run over and get their pep talk. The players are coordinated by a dependable authority outside of themselves who organizes them to all work together. I say to you that that is Jesus. That Jesus is the one who choreographs our strategy and our teamwork. None of these unrelated parts of my life, some of which conflict with others, tend to keep us in confusion until we find a powerful unifying force and directing personality. And that person, of course, is Jesus, the risen Jesus. That's why he said, "Follow me." If you want everything else in your life to make sense, first, you've got to follow him. And that's why we have to move from the empty tomb in Jerusalem to someplace over there called Galilee. So what would that look like to follow the risen Lord? First and most importantly, you need to remember that Jesus has already done something wonderful for you. Jesus has already done something marvelous. He arose from the grave so that we might not have to fear death. He has already placed his talents in you, his love into you. Think of yourself as like a lamp with a cord on it. You can plug that lamp anywhere you want into your house. You can plug it into your couch. You can plug it into your plants. You can plug it in under the carpet. But unless you get it into the outlet, you're not going to get any light. It's the same thing with Jesus. If you have to plug into him in order to get some sort of energy and some sort of power, some sort of organization into your life. Or to put it another way, if it were possible to lose weight by knowing about diets, then most people would have no trouble at all keeping weight off, would they? It would be quite simple. I have read about enough diets in my life that I don't have to read anything else in a magazine like Time or Newsweek about diets ever again. I know it all. It's all right here. But that doesn't translate to anything on the scale, does it? Unless you change your lifestyle. We need to move from knowing about Jesus to knowing Jesus. Jesus is the source of power, and this relationship with him comes through prayer. When the disciples went about and were healing people, they prayed. When they met persecution, they prayed. When they failed, they prayed. When they needed to get away from everybody, when people were bothering them and there was too much noise going on, they prayed. They got away. And prayer is the primary way in which we enter into a relationship with the risen Christ. A little boy was playing in his backyard in Arizona, and he was pushing a rather large boulder. And it was about the same size as he was. And he was pushing it, and he was getting a little bit of leverage on it, but not a lot. But he was never going to get it to move. And his dad asked him, "Hey, are you using all of your strength?" And the boy pushed again as hard as he could. And he said, "Yes, Dad, I am." And he says, "No, you're not. You haven't asked me." And they moved it together. Prayer is like that. We bash our hands raw until our knuckles are bruised and bloodied on the boulders of life. But we never think to ask God to help us move them. And that's what prayer does. You know that person that you can't forgive? You know that person that just really every time you pick up the phone, they get under your skin somehow? Ask the Lord to help you forgive them. Or that relative that you're going to see today at lunch or supper tonight. That relative that you're going to see and you always want to help but you don't know how. Name her in your prayers tonight. Because God will hear you. And God will provide you with some sort of answer, with some sort of direction, with some sort of force. Jesus is the power source, and he lights our hearts. All we have to do is reach out for him. So the first thing we're to do is follow. We've got to look and see where Jesus is and then go to him. The second thing we have to do is pray. The third thing is to serve. Jesus told his disciples how to do work. And the way to do work was to serve. The angel even commands the women to serve. It's not enough for them to witness the empty tomb. But then the angel tells them, go. You've got to go and tell other people. You've got to tell the disciples and Peter that he's going ahead of you. In the revolutionary days, a corporal was angrily ordering the men under him in the colonial army, to raise a beam. And it was very heavy. And the corporal was giving the men all sorts of trouble about it. He was barking orders at them, and they were having terrible trouble moving this beam. And a man walked by in civilian clothes, and he looked and he sized up the situation for a moment, and he looked at the corporal and he looked at the men, and he said to the corporal, he says, "Why don't you help them lift it? Looks like they could use a hand. It looks pretty heavy." "Sir, I am a corporal," said the man. So the man in civilian clothes apologized for this breach of etiquette. He took off his very fancy coat, helped the men himself to move the beam. They got all sweaty and a little bit dirty. When they got the beam placed, the man went over to the corporal and said, "Corporal, next time your men need help, call on your general and I'll be glad to lend a hand." And General George Washington put on his coat and walked away. It's human nature to want other people to serve us. It's human nature to pull rank. It's human nature to want the resurrection experiences explained to us. Where is Jesus in our really complex and fractured world? We want the Easter drama and Jesus' voice to be argued scientifically or proven 100%. We want to see Jesus right now before our eyes. Yet notice that the angel doesn't even explain the resurrection to the women. They don't even get a vision of the risen Jesus. Instead, he says, Jesus isn't here. He's in Galilee. Go, go and find him. The angel commands them to keep going, keep serving. So if you want Easter all nailed down, secure and certain, I've got bad news for you. That's not the way the risen Christ does business. What he offers isn't explanation. He offers a relationship with him now and today and tomorrow and into the future. You could buy a plane ticket. You could go to the Holy Land today, and you could stand all day outside the traditional site where the empty tomb is, where they say this probably was the empty tomb. You could spend your whole life there, the rest of your days, and gaze into that empty tomb, and you might not understand the Easter story any better. However, if you get up, if you serve, if you care, if you clothe the naked, if you feed the hungry, right here in Murraysville, right here in your neighborhood, I guarantee you, you will learn more about Jesus than you ever imagined you could. The story about the women at the tomb and the disciples is a story of following Jesus, both before his resurrection and afterwards. Jesus took his disciples to where they would never go on their own. And so it is with us. Jesus takes us where we would never go on our own. Jesus will not be held down by death, nor location, nor my prejudices, nor nationality, nor anything. Jesus is stronger than all that. We must follow Jesus into whatever Galilee you must go to tomorrow morning. That's where Jesus is, and that's where he will meet you. My friends, the risen Jesus is once again on the move. Go, there you will see him, just as he told you. Amen.